Let's do the 60-second savings challenge. Step one, download Rocket Money. Step two, link your accounts and see every subscription you're paying for. Tap one you don't use and cancel it. That's money back every month. Step three, create a financial goal. $50 every paycheck. Or let the app automatically move small amounts of cash when you can afford it. In a week, you'll forget you set it up. In a month, you'll see real dollars piling up. In a year, you'll be shocked at how much money you've saved. Bonus challenge. Upload an internet or phone bill and let Rocket Money try to lower it. You only pay if they find you savings. On average, Rocket Money members can save up to $740 a year when using all of the app's premium features. Users love the app with over 186,000 five-star ratings. Make saving money the resolution you actually keep. Start the 60-second savings challenge at rocketmoney.com/cancel. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
Welcome into Stone Cold Shows, episode 21 of season 2. I'm Brandon Strange. I'm joined by Charlie Palillo and Josh Jordan. Read Charlie's column weekly on sportsmap.com. Follow him on X at Palillo. Read Josh's work daily on sportsmap.com and follow him on X at Josh Jordan 975. Guys, what a difference a month makes, going from 10 games back to now knocking on Seattle's door for the division lead here. Let's start with the pitching. Astros, at the end of that Mets series, don't get their typical Blanco performance, but the offense picks them up late in that game. And then in the opener of this Toronto series, Hunter Brown keeps his dominance going. One run over his last five starts. Look, they are walking a tightrope with pitching and just availability of guys. What are you seeing, Charlie, that's allowing them to walk this razor's edge right now?
First off, not for those pesky licensing fees. We could have used his entry music today. Good times, Paul. A little tribute to the Cars there. They're just now doing the stuff that over the last years the Astros routinely did. If the right didn't get you, the left would. If the left didn't get you, the right would. Their earned run average in June was the best in the American League at 3.54. You know what? The Astros earned run average in May was 3.62, barely higher. March, and then season started the 28th through April, the earned run average was 5.01. So the pitching was horrible the first month. All the bullpen meltdowns, iffy starting pitching. It was just a lousy pitching staff. Stabilized in May, excelled in June, and, you know, we'll presume he's going to get back in the rotation at some point after the All-Star break. If he pitches reasonably well upon return, people are going to start saying, hey, that Justin Verlander, he reminds you of Hunter Brown, as opposed to the other way around. Hunter Brown largely junking that four-seam fastball, at least as his primary fastball. It has absolutely 180 the guy's season, 180 the guy's career, and he's just been magnificent, right? American League Pitcher of the Month with a 1.16 earned run average, and so why not start July with six scoreless innings against a weak, but not absolutely pathetic, Toronto Blue Jays offense. So Hunter Brown, absolutely A1 in terms of June's pitching excellence. Blanco hasn't been super duper crisp every time out, but you know what? He hasn't gotten bombarded in one start this season. So at minimum, he's going to keep you in a game start, if not quality, every time out over the last 6-8 starts. Then where they've been a little bit off, Eric Geddy's been in and out. Bipolar pitching Fromber. I mean, inning to inning, much less game to game. They weren't able to overcome him Friday night in New York. But overall, right, the offense, boom, and we'll get into that in more detail. And, you know, one of the biggest early season bugaboos, the bullpen part of it, but it was just always something. If you got good pitching, you figure out how to lose 3-2. If you hit well, you'd blow it and lose 7-6. Right over the first 2 months, they lost six games they led after seven innings. Came close to doing it Saturday, but didn't do it Saturday. You know, the Astros haven't played a one-run game now in 3 weeks. So if you're going to suck at one-run games, don't play any more one-run games. They're also 6-9 in two-run games. If Hader doesn't give up the home run Monday in the ninth inning, that would have been another 3-1, three-run win. So not only Astros just winning, they're winning with relative ease during this stretch now of 10 wins in 11 games. But the bullpen, Taylor Scott certainly gets high commendation. Hader's been by and large excellent now for over a month. Abreu, he dances through the raindrops sometimes, but his overall numbers have been outstanding for over a month. And even Presley's, generally speaking, cleaned it up in recent weeks. So they're just back to being a really big, a really good ball club. And Brandon, you touched upon it, the tight wire of the depth of the starting rotation. And you know what? You play the course. In this stretch, they've had a nice sprinkle of off days. They're going to have stretches in the second half where they play 18 days in a row, 16 days in a row, 13 days in a row. And if you go with a four-man rotation with an iffy guy or two, and then the bullpen, it's asking a lot. Well, one of the things you ask is for the offense to clobber people. And they're doing that with more regularity now.
Yeah, I'm kind of excited with the pitching to think that Luis Garcia might be back here in a few weeks. You know, he's expected to take another step forward, go down to Corpus Christi, hopefully throw a couple innings. That'll be huge if you get him back. Lance McCullers, maybe a couple, 3 weeks after him. I know it's Lance McCullers. I'm not betting the farm on that, but it is what it is. He's scheduled to come back. And then you look at Verlander, he's starting to throw the ball around a little bit. That's what you need. And if you get, you know, starts from Sean Dubin, if he can come in a pinch and give you 3-4 innings, I mean, there's not a lot more you can ask for there. That, you know, Fromber's kind of the one concerning, you know, element in this. He's given up at least 5 runs in 2 of his last 4 starts. And when he starts getting frustrated, I notice with him, he just rears back and tries to throw it as hard as he can. You know, when he gets lit up, you can expect a 98-mile-an-hour fastball coming from Fromber after that, just out of just anger and disappointment. But that's not what got him to where he is. It's about focusing on hitting your spots, trying to get guys to hit the ball into the ground. So we've seen a lot of that with Fromber, where he just tries to throw it past guys when he gets frustrated, but right down the middle. And we know big league hitters, these guys can time bullets. You gotta get them off balance. You gotta work in your breaking stuff. But we know Fromber's pedigree. We think he'll be okay. So if he's kind of your main concern and an Arrighetti where he's just a rookie, you don't know what to expect from him from start to start, you're in a good position here. It's great to see what the Astros are doing. I am a little concerned though with, seems like Hader gives up a home run every other appearance. I know that's not exactly the case, but I don't want to be too hard on him because at least he's throwing fastballs and trying to get ahead in counts when he has a few runs to play with. That's what we want him to do. You don't want him walking guys and getting into big innings. If he gives up a first pitch home run when you have a cushy lead, not the end of the world there. And like you mentioned with Abreu, you know, the 0-2 pitch the other day against the Mets and he gives up the home run, you know, really close to coughing up the game on Monday as well. But he's got great stuff and he's been used a lot. So I like to give Abreu the benefit of the doubt. That guy's pitched a lot of innings already this year and they're going to need him for more. But overall, you've got to love what you're seeing from the pitching, especially if you look at what could be coming back, not that far in the distant future. And then the trade deadline, they may go get an arm there as well.
Hader has history of giving up dingers. He gave up 15 in 75 innings in a season in which he actually had a decent ERA a few years ago. As you referenced, Josh, if you're hard and straight, major league hitters can turn it around on it some. I just wanted to amplify on Fromber, who's so exasperating, including to himself. I'm starting to think Fromber Valdez may not win a gold glove during his career. And when it goes, I mean, it goes completely. That was just a stupid flip try at the plate the other night. But the Angels game, right? It was one inning where homer, line drive. Really one inning in the Mets game where it just fully eroded. But that the Mets knocked him around. Good starting pitchers every once in a while, they're going to get wrapped. And the Mets were the best offense in baseball until the last 2 days of June. So they've been doing a lot of damage against a lot of people. But Fromber, even when he gets cuffed, I forget the opponent when he gave up 3 in the first, and you're like, oh, it's bad Fromber night. He gave up nothing after that. He still gives you innings almost every time out. And that is very critical in a rotation that, as a rubber band, is being stretched pretty far.
Yeah, we talked about it the other day, Josh, on our bonus episode, how sometimes you can have a guy you haven't seen works well against the opposition. Blue Jays come in on Monday with Yuriel Rodriguez and shut the Astros down outside of a Jeremy Pena home run. And thankfully, Jordan Leip tacks on those insurance runs, which, as you noted, was super huge considering Josh Hader giving up that dinger in the bottom of the inning. Astros had the best record in all MLB in June, have won 10 of their last 11. Just as a side note, I saw some Mets fans talking about how the series should have been a sweep. I don't know how that was. New York was fighting from behind the entire game on the series finale. Josh, you talked about some of the injuries. Catch everybody up on some of those before we get to the offense here. Dana Brown on the pregame show talked about how they've got Luis Garcia. He's up to throwing 93, 94 now. And so they're excited about his progress. He projects end of July, early August for Luis Garcia. Jake Bloss may get one more pen before he does a rehab start, or he just may go straight to a rehab start. You mentioned JV playing catch from 60 feet. And then Tucker, swinging off a tee, still sore. I thought it was interesting they talked about how they're continuing to get MRIs to look at what's going on there as the swelling subsides, but he's still got pain there, working out, but not really doing a lot of baseball activities outside of swinging off that tee. Charlie, how much more amazing is it that this team is doing this without one of their quality sluggers? And it seems like it's coming from top to bottom in this lineup. You're getting timely hits. They saw a stat that coming into Monday's game in his last 15 games, John Singleton, 12 of 43, hitting for 279 and a 354 on base. Talk about how the contributions from up and down this lineup, even getting a late RBI from Chaz in that series finale against the Mets, has really helped buoys, not the right word, help them to maintain this white hot streak they're on.
Well, Wednesday will mark 1 month since Kyle Tucker last played. I mean, at this point, who's going to be shocked if it turns out there was some sort of hairline fracture in there, and that the swelling, even a bad bone bruise shouldn't take a month. But if it does, it does. But Kyle Tucker was by far their best offensive player this season when he went down. I put in the most recent sports map column. I don't think he needs to familiarize himself with Wally Pipp. The guy who had a headache, got benched. A kid named Lou Gehrig went in and played, and Wally Pipp was never seen again. Kyle Tucker is going to go right back into the lineup in right field every day, batting third or cleanup, wherever a spot places him. But you lose Tucker, and all you got from Verlander in June was two poor starts. Five innings, four earned runs in each of them before I guess he owned up to, yeah, my neck's not right and my arm's attached to my neck. Where the Astros were at the May, he said, yeah, you're about to lose Kyle Tucker for almost the entire month, and Verlander's going to give you two poor starts, and then he's gone for the entire month. You know, there've been a lot of, well, maybe 2024 is just not the Astros' year. But as we talked about, you know, when they were at their nadir points, 7-19, and then again, 12 under 500 at 12-20. There's a lot of season, a lot of time for worms to turn. That can be good or bad. But specifically with the offense, which simply was not good in May. Mentioned earlier, the pitching was fine in May. The offense is why they only went 15-14. Well, in June, to join a pitching staff that posted the best ERA in the American League, the Astros put up the best offensive numbers in the American League, averaging nearly 5.5 runs per game after averaging barely over 4 runs per game. That's a huge difference. And, you know, back in the day, there were the killer bees. I'm going to call them the alpha A's, right? It starts, doesn't end, but it starts with Altuve and Alvarez. In May, Jose Altuve had his worst calendar month since 2013 in the batter's box. He was awful. He had .237. His OPS was some 600. Well, he went back to being Jose Altuve in June. .333 batting average, OPS near 900. Jordan Alvarez in May, in terms of run production, was a weakling. For the entire month, he had 2 home runs, 4 RBI. OPS wasn't terrible at .776, but certainly sub-Jordan. Well, in June, 7 homers, 19 runs batted in, OPS over 1,100. So your two best players, with Kyle Tucker out of the mix, certainly get back to being your two best players. And then there's the, when it's going well, the little things that, they messed that up, or the other team came up with the one key hit. Monday, most recently, Jeremy Peña hadn't homered in 141 at-bats. He'd been a horrific offensive player for over a month and a half. And until the insurance home run from Jordan in the ninth, that was it. And maybe if it was only 1-0, Josh Hader doesn't give up a, I don't want to say token homer, but maybe he's sharper to start that inning. You win that game 1-0, and it's because of Jeremy Peña's home run. It's been nothing offensively for about 6 weeks. Alex Bregman, right, went off for about a month. He'd flattened out. He was 0 for 14 and then delivers the 2-out game-winning hit in the ninth inning Saturday at New York. And the one other guy who needs to be really given a doff of the cap is Yiner Diaz, who was not 2024 Martin Maldonado-esque, because Martin's digging for new lows, even by his standards. But Yiner, through May, OPS lower than where Maldonado was over his 3 years with the Astros. Well, Yiner in June, few games missed in there, where Caratini filled in with a couple of nice moments before he got hurt. But Yiner finishes June hitting .363. He has a homer now and nearly 70 at-bats, but that's okay when you're producing singles and doubles and some timely runs batted in mixed in there. Jake Myers fell off sharply, and then he mixes in just enough here and there. Chaz McCormick hasn't found it, but he had the 1-2 home run game that when your heavy lifters are doing the heavy lifting, you just get a little bit here, a little bit there from the kind of the supporting actors. You add it all up, and the Astros are back to being as potent an offense as there is in a league.
For me, I'll just focus on the outfield quickly. Jake Myers is making so many plays out there defensively in center field. And he's been hitting pretty well. He went over on Monday, but most of the team struggled at the plate on Monday, so I'm not going to hold that against him too much. I mean, just to give you an idea, he batted second with Altuve out, and you got Bregman at leadoff. So that tells you what Espada is seeing from Jake Myers, that he wants him at the top of the order. And I just think it's interesting, too. We were seeing Loperfido play every day for a good chunk, and now that's kind of gone away. They seem to be going more to Trey Cabbage over the last few games, and he's looked pretty good at the plate, and he's made some plays in the outfield as well. Chaz is still scuffling, but he's been in the lineup. So I'm interested to see what they do with Loperfido. If Singleton starts hitting better, are we not going to, and by better, I just mean a little bit. I know he kind of is what he is at this point in his career. But we saw Loperfido at first base the other day. He looked okay in that game. Are they going to mix him in there? He got that big hit over the weekend, so he is doing something. But he was kind of – we talked about it in our last video, Brandon, that he'd had a few poor games in a row, and Espada responded by getting Cabbage in there. So I'm curious to see how the outfield is going to shake out, especially when Kyle Tucker returns. And then finally, one more thing on Tucker. If I remember right, he drilled a foul ball into his shin, and then he did it again on the one that he's been out for. So you have to wonder if he really just hit it right in that same spot, and he kind of injured it really twice, not just once. I wonder if that might be part of why it's taken so long for him to get back.
It does make you wonder, and I know he took a foul ball off that same part last year as well. So maybe invest in a higher, taller shin pad. I'm not real sure. Look, Mauricio Dubon's also been a very timely hitter too. Where would you be at if you didn't have his bat in this lineup? And who would have thought we'd be saying that a couple of years ago? Saying, thank goodness Dubon's bat is in your lineup. 2023 and this year have been a redemption story for Mauricio Dubon. He's always up there giving you good bats outside of the last couple of games. He's a guy who tends not to strike out. You've needed that guy, whether it's coming up with big hits and runners with scoring position or just keeping an inning going station to station. And that's really been one of the things that I've noticed that has kind of turned the season for them, is doing a lot more station to station, manufacturing runs, bunting, getting RBI groundouts, sac flies. They're really doing a lot of the little things to tack on runs throughout the innings, as opposed to just scoring all their runs in one inning like we saw before this streak. Charlie, what have you seen with Joe Espada specifically? Is there anything you're noticing from him where maybe he's managing guys a little different? We talked a little earlier in the season before the Abreu saga came to a finale there. Kind of felt like he was a little painted into a corner by having to use Abreu. Now that he's got a clean canvas, so to speak, what are you noticing from the skip?
Well, yeah, it is liberating when you lose the worst player in your offense as an option or a mandate, whatever it was there at the end with Jose Abreu. I've liked Spot's willingness to move guys up and down in the lineup subject to who's doing well. I don't even want to call it controversy with Bregman when he dropped him as low as six. But Jeremy Peña has been somewhat on a sliding scale in the lineup, where he was their cleanup hitter for a while, even when he wasn't hitting very well, but it was one of my options. Ultimately, it's very simple. Your best players need to lead the way, and the secondary guys need to know their roles. Alvarez and Altuve playing poorly gives the Astros no chance to have a good offense. They're two total studs, and batting first and third they come up more than almost everyone else in the lineup. So if they're going to be a 1-2 fail, as they were in May, you're just not going to have good offensive production. Two guys isn't enough to have a good lineup, but if your two best players aren't pulling their weight, probably means you're going to have a bad lineup. And again, the manager only makes so much difference. Terry Francona is probably going to be a Hall of Fame manager. He retires in Cleveland. The Guardians have been tremendous this year. I don't think Stephen Vogt is some sort of savant. The Indians have just hit a lot better. Former Indians. Put that in the fine jar. The Guardians offense has just gotten a lot better this year. And you can, you know, look at all those spots through history, a managerial change. Sometimes there's an initial jolt, you know, if guys are awakened by need to pick it up, or if I guess a very unpopular manager was finally let go. But in the end, it's a player's game over 162 games, whether you have a Mensa or moron making the decisions in the dugout. It's not going to be a difference of 10, 15 games with that manager. Players need to do work, and the Astros players, key guys individually and the overall collectively, they have been doing work.
Yeah, just his management of the bullpen, you look a lot better when guys like Taylor Scott are pitching the way they are. I mean, they've gotten some big contributions. Seth Martinez, I know he's hadn't been perfect recently, but over the course of the year, he's been very good. Brian King has been somebody I've been impressed with in limited work. It's really great how they're doing this. Even Montero came in and pitched a clean inning on Monday. He was the only guy they didn't really use in that extra inning game on Sunday. So I was curious to see what are they going to do with Montero, because he's been very poor this year, but he had a clean inning, so thank goodness. So I hope you see a little more of that from him, but the numbers just don't dictate it. He's a guy where, you know, in case of emergency, break open glass. That's kind of Montero when it's your last option. You can go to him. He's not getting a lot of swing and miss, but that's okay. He's not a guy you're counting on that much. I think Espada's done a good job. And just getting Fromber out of the game against the Mets the other day after he gave up 6 runs. And, you know, it was only 4 2/3 innings, but he pulled him out. He wasn't 95 pitches, so I understand that part. But then the bullpen holds him to more, no more runs for the rest of the game, and you win that ball game by getting Fromber out of there. So I like that Espada's like, no, you know, you don't have it today. We're going to try and keep this thing as close as we can. We have a good bullpen. Maybe they'll keep us in this ball game, and they did. The bats came through. They came away with the series win. They start the Blue Jays series with the bullpen looking good as well, Hunter Brown looking good. This is what you wanted. This is what you knew the Astros could be this year, and they're finally hitting their stride.
Yeah, you knew they could, but you have to admit, it looked like they're defying the odds and doing it, though, considering the fact that you're down so many pitchers and Kyle Tucker as well. And again, Monday's game, Altuve sitting that game, and that lineup was very strange, but it worked. What I like is the fact that this does provide flexibility for Espada to be a manager and to manage based on merit and not necessarily based on who's getting paid the most. And Josh, to your point, I did find it very funny that even with a 5-run lead late, they went to someone else besides Montero. So you said break in case of emergency. Monday's game was that. They needed Montero to come up, and thankfully he got the job done. A pretty efficient inning, all things considered. So Charlie, we didn't get to discuss with you the big rumor last week, and that was from Michael Schwab's report that the Astros were very interested in possibly trading for Vlad Guerrero Jr. Now, Josh and I thought this was highly unlikely given that just the amount that Houston would have to give up for him. Although he does have another year on his deal, so that does mean it's not a rental situation. Dana Brown likes to trade for guys who are not rentals. So that's good from a stability standpoint. In the case of Guerrero, it would certainly solidify what you got going on at first base. Also, just in general, the bigger need as it stands right now as we record this would be pitching. However, we do know Luis Garcia is on track to get back. He's already throwing in the 90s. He could get back by the end of July. Lance McCullers could, in theory, follow behind him by a few weeks. And JV could be back by the end of the month. Is it out of the question, Charlie, that maybe the Astros and Dana Brown make a play for a bat to bolster an offense that has hit well throughout the season, but they've struggled at times to get guys home and not to mention have lacked a little bit in the power department?
Well, generally, I'm a big never-say-never guy, but I lean against their big bat acquisition is going to be Kyle Tucker. unless it turns out that leg is really messed up and he's going to be out another month or 6 weeks. The Astros just finished a June in which they led the American League by batting .281 as a team and scoring over 5.4 runs per game, more than a full run per game more than the Astros posted in May. And they did that with Kyle Tucker plunging first, second, off his leg third, and been seen on the diamond since. So I think that's the big bat. Vlad Guerrero, we're to the point in the schedule where rumors are badly overpriced at a dime per dozen, but he would make sense in that there is player control for next season. Vladdy's very good, or close to when he put up his 1,000 OPS MVP season as a 22-year-old. Pays to stay in shape, young athletes. And I think with Vlad Guerrero Jr., it's an issue. But you know, as is, he's an 800 OPS guy. He would be an upgrade at first base over John Singleton and Mauricio Dubon or anyone else I'd stick there. But you're absolutely blowing through the said tax threshold, right? And Guerrero makes $12.5 million this year. Next year, salary arbitration for the final time before it becomes free agent eligible. Well, let's peg him in the $18 to $20 million range. You're paying first base $19.5 million next year, like it or not, and there's no like it attached to that. So that'll be a pretty big swallow, but the player fit the extra year, because otherwise in the lineup with Tucker coming back to the outfield, what would you be looking to add? Unless it was a real thunderbolt. They got that guy, like they thought they were getting Bryce Harper a few years ago, where they didn't have a specific crying out need in the lineup, but Bryce freaking Harper. And in the end, the Nationals backed out on that. I don't know who that player might be. Vlad Guerrero might be the best offensive player moved if the Blue Jays on their road to nowhere decide, okay, let's maximize the value when we can trade him for two playoff races worth of prospects. But I think the Astros, you know, was Jim Crane more chastened by the start from which they had to extricate themselves and have done so quite nicely? That is, and okay, for this year, we'll do the higher tax again if there's a good player to be added. Or is he emboldened to say, I'm Jim Crane, I win, the Astros win, we're fine. In fact, three games back of Seattle, this division's ours again. I'd be very surprised if they made a big move. Guerrero's the obvious player you could see as sensible right now, as opposed to Paul Goldschmidt if the Cardinals were to say, yeah, they're a wild card team right now, so those are going to sell. But I'd be wary of really banking on Luis Garcia coming back and pitching well. Who knows with Verlander? He's 41 with that bad neck. McCullers to me is finding a $20 bill in the street. If he comes back and you find that, great. Otherwise, just go about your day. I'd still be looking for one more innings back of the rotation guy, unless there really is fire to the smoke that was blown about Vlad Guerrero.
Yeah, and we talked about this the other day, Brandon, so I don't have to go into it too much. But starting pitching specifically seems like where they would go, you know, fourth, fifth starter type, just to have a little insurance, because that's a lot of ifs with McCullers and with Garcia and Verlander and Arrighetti. You don't know much about him. He's a rookie. And Blanco hitting that innings limit coming up. So it makes a lot of sense. And is Hunter Brown going to continue to look like the best pitcher in baseball? I sure hope so. But you know, that's asking a lot. So yeah, I would probably look for a little insurance there, but we will say that Crane loves to make a splash. So that would definitely be a splash, making a move like that for Guerrero. But yeah, with the money, the tax threshold, just, it doesn't make a lot of sense to me right now.
Now, we've been talking about the Astros chopping down Seattle's lead in the AL West. They've also been able to put some distance between them and Texas. The Rangers are coming back from their own slew of injuries, too, though. They're looking to get back Jacob DeGrom. Astros also have a series with them right before the All-Star break, so that could either make that distance further or it could help Texas cut into that lead. Charlie, what's your concern level with the Rangers that they could regain form, possibly make a push back up the standings as they get healthier and maybe refine that offense that they have seemingly lost this year?
Concern level right now from an Astros perspective for me is zero, because if the Rangers get it together and slingshot past the Astros, it probably means the Astros have fallen off themselves, and then Seattle and Minnesota and Kansas City and in Boston are teams to be mindful of. DeGrom's just a way better version of Lance McCullers. It's more a surprise when that guy is and stays healthy than when he isn't. McCullers' contract is horrible. DeGrom's contract is ridiculous. But Scherzer's back, is he going to hold up, right? He's their Verlander. Tyler Malley's another, maybe he's their Luis Garcia that they're counting on. But the Rangers' vaunted offense of last season, Adolis Garcia, I'm sure to the massive disappointment of Astros fans, basically stinks this year. Josh Young's absence has been huge. Marcus Semien recently went through a 5-for-50. Their outfield that Garcia isn't hitting is frankly terrible. Leody Taveras, since about midway last season, sucks offensively. Evan Carter, who was a huge boost to them down the stretch and had a terrific postseason, well, you're not going to be Rookie of the Year. Why Langford may go on to be a stud, and he hit the first cycle of the big league season on Sunday, but you're not going to be Rookie of the Year either. So I think the Rangers, you know, it wasn't a fluke that they won the World Series last year. They earned it. They tied for the division. Astros won on a tiebreaker, and then the Rangers were the best team in October. But that was then. This is now. I think the obvious concern by both the standings as they read today and the composition of the ball clubs, it's about Seattle. Specifically, do the Mariners acquire bats for a lineup sorely in need of them? Right, the Mariners' starting rotation remains excellent. It could probably use a little bit of bullpen help, but their lineup blows. And, you know, I don't know if Seattle's passionate enough day in, day out about baseball to be on him. Julio Rodriguez has been terrible this season. Starts the week with an OPS of 624. He has six doubles the entire season to go with just seven home runs, right? He leads off, and, you know, they chant, Julio. It should be, hey, wake up. Rodriguez was the best player in the American League after the All-Star break last year, but he wasn't as bad before the All-Star break last season. He is critical to that lineup in addition to adding a bat or two. If the Mariners pull that off and Julio gets back to being a star, the Mariners very well may win this division.
For me, I'm just looking at what a great time for the Astros to be getting hot and really starting to click, because after the Blue Jays, you go to Minnesota to play a team that you're competing with in the wild card. You got an opportunity to hit them with some losses and give yourself some wins, put you in a better spot with the wild card. And then you got a chance to really put your foot on the Rangers' throat for that last series before the All-Star break. That series is at home. Hey, guess what? The Astros are actually good at home now. They have a winning record, so we don't have to worry about that anymore. So now it's actually a good thing when they have some ball games at home. And then you look at the first series coming out of the All-Star break, you got the Mariners. So if the Astros can stay hot right here, this could really make a big difference in the outcome of the whole season. They have a real chance where they can stack some wins, give some teams some losses, and make a big difference in the standings. So stay hot, Astros. This is the time to do it.
Hey, while the Astros are playing the Blue Jays, Seattle's through with Baltimore. So if the tumblers click into place, the Astros could catch the Mariners near the weekend. The M's then do get the A's this weekend, which bridges me to the scheduling stuff. I mean, the Astros are piping hot. They've now been playing very good baseball for a longer stretch than they were garbage. 12-24, that's 36 games. Since then, over 48 games, they're 31-17, well over 600 baseball. Can they play at that clip the rest of the season? Possibly, but they're going to have other bumps in the road. The Astros are going to have another 3 or 4 game losing streak somewhere. They're going to lose 5 out of 7 somewhere along the way. But through this stretch, they've given themselves a little working margin where it doesn't doom them. They've gotten to the point where another bad month of baseball, it was over. But a bad week of baseball, you can still overcome that, which is good because they're likely to have that. The Mariners still have 17 games left with the Angels and the A's. The Astros have 13 games left with the Angels and the A's. And then there's the head-to-head, the one series out of the break up in Seattle and then one more later in the year back in Houston. The Astros have to beat the Mariners 5 of the 6 games they have left, or Seattle wins the tiebreaker. The series you referenced this weekend with the Twins, Minnesota came here and won 2 out of 3. So the Astros need to go win 2 out of 3 to get a split of that season series. Or do I have that wrong? Do the Astros take 2 out of 3 over the Twins? But certainly where Seattle is concerned, right, if it comes down to a tiebreaker as it did with the Rangers last year. So, I mean, you know, the Astros feel like a tsunami ready to wash over the American League West because that's what we've seen for most of a decade. But like those brokerage ads, past performance is no guarantee of future results.
I mentioned it in part one, but it really is amazing the difference a month has made, at least especially on the perception. We're looking at it from an outward standpoint, but I'm sure doubt creeps up in some of these guys' minds. So it probably can't even be articulated how important this month of baseball was for them. Because when we were in May, we were looking at soft spots in the schedule and saying, well, if they can just capitalize on this, but you really couldn't trust them at that point to really capitalize. And, you know, they would go 500 on a roadie against weaker competition, at least what we consider weaker competition. So the Astros being able to do this, probably in years past, probably hasn't been as important, but this year specifically, and what a slow start they got off to, I think that became more important. I'll give you guys the final word.
If the starting pitching holds up, the Astros lineup is just flat superior to that of the Mariners to overtake them. But, you know, there are no guarantees. And remember, the Astros, where their lineup was vastly superior to the Mariners and the second half of the season Rangers, the Astros went 1-5 at home against Kansas City and Oakland during September. So, you know, the Astros pedigree certainly gives the feel absolutely here. And I'm sure for many a Mariner fan, you know, if you're an Astros fan, of course you're thinking the Astros are inevitable. That's just how it is. But nothing lasts forever, but certainly could last this year. And they cut 10.5 down to 3 so quickly. But, you know, this wasn't the finishing kick. This was the surge to get back where you can make that finishing kick and win this thing over the second half of the season.
Yeah, this is what Dana Brown needed to see with the All-Star break coming up, trade deadline coming up. Like, okay, this ball club is in contention. And yeah, I checked that, Charlie, you're right, that the Twins took 2 out of 3 against the Astros. Starting pitching, because I'm really starting to feel good about this bullpen. There are so many good options here. And, you know, Presley's rounding into form. Abreu is a little scary, but we know how dominant he can be. And haters, haters. So, and the other guys are just the Taylor Scotts of the world. These guys are coming through for you when you really need them. So for me, it's going to be starting pitching. And if they can just stay hot, take advantage of what the schedule's giving them right here, I like their chances. Why wouldn't I? 7 straight. Why don't we do it 8?
Abreu has pitched a crazy amount of innings, though, worth noting. Haters pitched a lot more back-to-back innings. So they're asking a lot of them. Hopefully they can, as they get these guys back, they don't have to rely so heavily on that bullpen. And so they can find some relief as they get into a possible postseason situation. That's going to be it for this episode of Stone Cold Strohs. If you listen on podcast, you enjoy the show, please be sure to give us a 5-star rating. Charlie, Josh, and I will catch you next week. But as always, you don't have to wait that long to get your Houston sports fix. All you have to do is subscribe to Sports Map Houston, this channel, and Sports Map Texans, our other channel on YouTube, and we'll have some content for you during the week. Thanks for listening. Until next time, go Strohs.
And that's the bottom line, because Stone Cold said so.
When your company earns unlimited 2% cash back on all purchases with Capital One, that's serious business. So Steven at SandCloud got a serious business card, the Spark Cash Plus card from Capital One.
We used our 2% cash back to help build our retail presence.
Savvy, Steven.
And we get big purchasing power, so our business can spend more and earn more.
The Spark Cash Plus card from Capital One. What's in your wallet?
Terms and conditions apply. Find out more at CapitalOne.com/SparkCashPlus.
Marriott Bonvoy is the official hotel partner of U.S. soccer. Join Marriott Bonvoy today to get closer to the game with exclusive perks, unforgettable experiences, and benefits that go beyond the pitch. Spring Hill Suites, part of Marriott Bonvoy, offers complimentary hot breakfast and spacious all-suite accommodations, perfect for the whole team, with room for up to 6 guests. Make your next getaway a win. Learn more at springhillsuites.marriott.com.